Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. Woo-hoo! We are here. I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we are here to talk about every single comic book that is in our massive stack that came out this week. Alex, who's usually in charge of saying names, numbers, and titles, isn't here. So that means you're going to listen to the smoky tones of your guy JT dropping them on you. You ready to get into this, Pete?
Yes, please.
Yes, please. Let's kick it off with a comic that has got to get you in the feels in some department, Pete. Punisher number one from Marvel Comics, written by David P. Pose, art by Dave Wachter. Pete, how do you feel? There's a whole new man in the Skull shirt.
Yeah, it's an exciting time. You know, new Punisher is very exciting. I got to say, we got to see a little bit of a sneak peek of this when we were at Comic-Con.
That's right, because you talked to David, right?
Yeah. We're in Baltimore, the Baltimore Comic-Con.
Yeah. And you can check out that interview in our feed if you want to hear a little bit more behind the scenes of
And he gave David's us a little sneak peek, but it was black and white. So this was a big kind of shock. To see it,
a shock. You were shocked
in color. You know what I mean?
Did you like it? Do you like?
Well,
I mean,
here's the thing. There's like glowing stuff on his chest plates, and images that I was like, what is that on his shoulder, and that kind of stuff. But let's.
So wait. So that bothers you because it's too flashy? It's too like. It's like.
Well,
at the club.
It's an interesting kind of thing, you know what I mean? So it's a little like distracting at first because you're kind of like, you know, as a Punisher friend, you're like, what is this? You know, this is the Skull Nose a plug to charge his cell phone? Like, what's going on?
Well,
like,
I do think there's a line in here where he's like, oh, these plates glow. Like, he's mad about it, his armor glowing. And I thought that was interesting that he's sort of to give my overall take, like, this Punisher is much less, he's sort of an unwilling Punisher. He's someone who's like, I'm here to do my job. If you think, want to call me the Punisher, I don't care. Like, he's not as into the angst, the like, I'm tortured here. He's like, this happened to me and I'm going to methodically get revenge. And
so let me ask you, if if you're going about your day, right, and then your family gets killed, similar to how the Punisher's family gets killed.
Okay, big statement to say.
It seems like you then have to take up the Punisher mantle. You know what I mean? Because that's what happened to this guy. He was like, oh, man, I don't want to be the Punisher, but my family was murdered by a bunch of hitmen and goons, so now I got to do it. So I guess that's just kind of what happens if you live in the Marvel universe.
It's inevitable that you're going to end up punishing.
Well, someone. I'm not saying it's inevitable. I'm just saying if it happens to you, it's like, okay, well, you get a Punisher shirt in the mail and it's like, all right, you got to do what you got to do now.
In the mail? What do you mail? I mean, that's a fucked up thing. If you're mailing out Punisher shirts to people, what a big, big letter drop. The thing I would say here is like I don't want to spoil sort of the backstory here, but this person, our guy whose name is Joe Garrison, I want to say, is a little bit more, a little ahead of the Frank Castle game. Like he has more training, more resources. He's jumping in almost.
No, I don't know about more training. I mean, Frank is a Marine. You know what I mean?
Like, well, and I think he had military training, but this guy is like a one man operation out of the gate. You know, we don't have the same like him just like picking up a gun and just kicking a door open and shooting people. He has resources. And that's not a criticism. That's just like the choice. And what I like about it from a writing perspective is it lets us sort of continue, as a Punisher fan, continue to just pick up where it left off. And maybe I have a feeling we'll maybe get some more backstory on Joe. Mm-hmm. I would really like that because I want to know more about him as opposed to right now he is just like a Punisher being a badass. I love the villain choice that we get in here. That's a fun surprise reveal. I would like to see this Punisher be more in the Marvel Universe rather than in his own sort of just like shooting people place.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoyed this. I loved all the action. I love how it starts. Interesting kind of, you know, with the tech, it's a more kind of like tech focused where he has this cool gun, what's the rail gun, you know.
Yeah.
Lasers, but it's also bullets, which is a little weird. But just has the same badass Punisher level. I mean, that shot he pulls off in between the trains was fucking pretty badass. That was definitely great. Felt like the Punisher to me. Yeah, and, you know, Punisher's not working alone here, has a friend who does machines, so that's always nice, you know.
A Donatello, if you will.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I mean, I like this. I wasn't mad at it at all. I think, you know, yeah.
Marvel, you got a pull quote for Pete LePage. I wasn't mad at it. Put it on your book. Let's move on and talk about Batman number 139 from DC Comics, written by Chip Zdarsky, art by Jorge Jimenez and Jorge Corona. This issue has Batman just out there. We're following up on, I guess, the Catwoman gang crossover and taking some of that stuff forward. Pete, how did you feel about this Batman issue?
I really like this. I felt like it was a cool kind of like setup of like the title and everything. I feel like there's nothing better than a really good Joker Batman story. And I feel like Zdarsky is really kind of setting up a really interesting one. This is just a great start. I love the art style. You know, Batman kind of picking up Joker breadcrumbs and kind of following things, getting to the one-on-one battle. Also, the backup is cool with Vandal Savage, and I love the art style on that. So, yeah, I feel like this is a great Batman book.
The name of this arc is Mind Bomb. This is part one. And in this, we see the Batman of Zur-En-Arr, which has become this sort of looming threat. Maybe the villain of this arc, because we have in the Batman fully rogue, no Bat family at all, not seeming psychologically in a good place, even worse than maybe normal Batman situation. And he's going to take down the Joker. And honestly, when Batman confronts the Joker, I'm like, oh, this is like two Jokers fighting each other. Something we'll talk about later in the stack, but these guys, this Batman is a broken Batman, and he's fighting the broken Joker.
A broken Joker, yeah.
So, like, that's
maybe
something
they can
make
them whole. Maybe they're two parts of a heart that when you know.
Oh, that's beautiful. And one says best, and one says friends.
Oh yeah.
Oh, remind me. I need to send you the other half of the heart that I got.
I've been waiting by the mailbox for a long time, buddy.
Yeah, I know it's coming. It's coming, brother. But I haven't seen a story where I'm like, oh, I don't know. I guess, rooting for Batman here. But, like, I'm like, these are just two people fighting. Like, there's not, like, a huge – there's not a right person, per se, here.
Well, no? I mean, I don't know about that. Historically, I would go with Batman.
I mean, he's so busted.
Aren't we all busted?
Wow. Really something to think about, Pete. Do you like this? Did you like this? I can't tell.
Yes. Yeah, I did. I did like it.
Great. Well, I don't know why you got suddenly shy. Maybe I shouldn't have said the best friends thing. let's move on and talk about Zawa and the Belly of the Beast number one.
Yes.
From Boom Studios by Michael Dialanis. Pete, you love this book, it sounds
yes.
like.
I think it's worth it for the super tight bananas art alone. I mean, damn, this is some great art. I say damn.
Okay.
I love this first ish. I really think it sets things up in a cool way. I'm very excited for more. But man, artistically, this is what I'm talking about. Like, Boom Studios, just it just so beautiful. The character designs, the world, they kind of suck you into this kind of magical place. And yeah, I'm having a blast with it.
I agree. This was a really fun read. Like, I don't fully understand. It's like a really interesting world. I don't fully understand what's happening yet.
Yeah.
But I'm not bothered by that because Agreed. The art is really cool. The world is interesting. It has this sort of food preparation fantasy element to it. And it's like a... it's hard to describe, I guess. It's like sort of a dystopian world, but it's not like Earth. It feels like it's this mountain sort of standalone thing.
But go ahead.
Okay.
I was just going to say, I also love how like you're getting this kind of like monster type character, but as soon as they are near like food, you see the human side of them. And it's like
such a lot like you, feel like.
Yeah.
Just give Pete a Pete snack if you want Pete to be Pete.
Agreed.
Otherwise, you just got the beast, and you don't want a podcast with the beast. That for a fact.
Charred Remains, number one.
Well, you can't say, just because Alice isn't here, you can't just jump in forward. Okay.
Sorry,
man. Why? You've decided, because here's the thing, we have to set this up. This comic isn't coming out till December 13th.
Yes,
so this is like something to think about for the future. But of course, we're talking about Charred Remains, number one from Mad Cave Studios, written by Anthony Cleveland, art by Andrea Muti. This comic really dealing with fire as an element, as a main character.
A lot of fire in today's stack.
A lot of fire in the stack. It's a hot stack.
It's a hot stack.
Pete, what did you think of Charred Remains?
I think this is a really great comic. I just think that like what's great about it is, and I'm trying not to spoil it, so excuse my
stuff. Please don't.
But it's like this, you think it's about one thing and then there's this turn and like I got scared. Like I was like, oh shit, just like the person in the comic. There was such a cool reveal and they did it so well with the art. I was just really, really impressed by this. Really,
you were scared.
Scary. It's awesome. It's intense. The art is just so colorful, jumps off the page, really impressive. Yeah, I love this book.
Yeah, the Andrea Muti art does a great job of being sort of expressive for the characters, but also have this, it really matches the book. The book being about like someone who survives a fire,
Don't spoil,
it's a light spoil, something who survives a fire, sees something in the fire, and then spends their life probably tracking that down. So the book has a little bit of like the colors and the sort of watercolor and sketchy feel to it. Feels like a relic from a fire in a way. And I think that
it's also like beautiful at the same time.
Yeah, no, that's not a negative.
It's really unbelievable.
It's really nice. And the story, like I really got into the story. Like it is very cool. I want to know. It's a mystery that I don't quite understand. A lot of books, it's like, I see, we just need to figure out who this one person is. And that's the mystery. This one could go in a lot of different directions. It's really exciting. Definitely something to check out just in time for the holidays. So please do. Let's move on to something that is full of question marks and vampire teeth. What if Dark, the Tomb of Dracula, number one from Marvel Comics, written by Marv Wolfman, art by David Cutler. In this, we get a what if story where I was like, what's the transition point here into the stuff that didn't happen in main continuity? But it's what if.
I definitely had a lot of questions about that.
Yeah. It's what if Dracula made a different choice at one point and ended up letting this guy go, sort of creating Blade in a different time period, I want to say.
See, that's my question was, is this what if Blade got bit by Dracula?
Yeah, I mean, I think technically it is that. But the fateful moment when we get the turn, I guess here's what it is. What if the legendary Dracula transformed Blade the Daywalker into a full-fledged vampire?
Oh, that's what it was.
Yeah.
All right, here's the problem. Okay, the emotional roller coaster I went on with this is, oh my God, I hate what ifs. And then I was like, Marv Wolfman, oh, I'm gonna read this.
Yeah.
And then I was like, kind of confused a little bit of like, well, this is kind of like Dracula's story, and this is also kind of like Blade's story. But where's the twist here? And I was a little bit like, are these two just worlds colliding and what's going on here? Now that you said that, it makes a lot more sense.
Yeah. And like, I think this has like, you can feel the Marv Wolfman of this in a big way. This has like some classic Marvel, you know, storytelling here, sort of like late Silver Age into like modern comics. Feels like the tone here and the David Cutler art reflects that in a really nice way.
Yeah.
This to me feels like something that I'm like, oh, is this setting up Blade in a way, or maybe it was meant to be like, it was originally written to be around like a Blade movie that has been delayed a fair bit. Cause it sort of comes at you out of nowhere, but I will say I did like the story. I like seeing Blade being more like the Blade from the original movie, which I feel like we get here in a good way. So I was on board with it for sure.
Yeah. Also, it's got great art.
Great art. Great classic art. Let's move on to another book with some fantastic art. Birds of Prey number 3 from DC Comics, written by Kelly Thompson, art by Leonardo Romero. In this book, the Birds of Prey crew is operating a little bit on the fringes of the DC universe, and they're taking the fight to Themyscira to rescue or slash save Sin, led by Black Canary. Pete, how did you feel
about this? I love this. Kelly Thompson is an amazing writer, big fan. I just felt like this was such an awesome issue. First off, cool-ass cover, all right?
Mm-hmm.
This is just an awesome issue. I love the art, love all the action, fun times, great comics. This is just, I love this idea of kind of breaking into the Amazon island here of the Themyscira and kind of running a mission, but not trying to hurt people. And the kind of Green Arrow trying to stall was a cute thing because he's like, I'm so sorry, Wonder Woman, please don't hurt me. I had a blast. I had such a blast reading this. This was such a cool breath of fresh air in the stack. And I just felt like the Kelly Thompson absolutely murdered this. This was such a mix of a great time and kind of a cool setup where you're not like upset by the choices they're making because they have to kind of pull some stuff against some friends, but they're doing it for a greater good. So it kind of works. Yeah. I just felt like I loved all the layers. I love everything that was happening. They really nailed the character moments in this and it felt like such a cool comic.
The Leonardo Romero art is so good. Like, it feels like a newsprint comic strip just elevated to being like a full action comic story. And it's really great. It really makes the book stand out so much. But that's not to shortchange Kelly Thompson. Just excellent characters. You can really feel the difference between all the different members of the Birds of Prey team here.
Yeah.
And it's great. I love what they're all doing. I love there's a bit of a heist here run by people who are not good at it. Great Harley Quinn moments in here. And honestly, sneakily, one of the best Green Arrow fights I've seen in ages. Green Arrow versus Wonder Woman in the back half of this book was awesome. So cool. Definitely one of my picks of the week. Definitely worth checking out. But let's move on to another of my picks of the week in Transformers number 2.
Picks of the week.
Back to back. That's the way we do it. Transformers number 2 from Image Comics, written and drawn by Daniel Warren Johnson. He's got three names because he's doing the work of two different people. It's fantastic. I talked about this.
DWJ. All he DWJ. Does is kill it.
He kills it. We had a great interview with him a month ago, which is worth checking out because he's one of those interviews where you tear up talking to him because he's just such an earnest, over-the-plate guy who is so good at what he does.
Yeah.
Emotional comic book storytelling with excellent art to back it up. And in this, we get a story that really makes Optimus Prime. What I love about this book so far is he makes the Transformers just like out of place in a way, and you see the Decepticons are just like, oh, let's ruin this place. And they're too big, they're too good at smushing humans and wrecking shit. And then on the other side, you have Optimus Prime and his crew, and they are trying desperately not to smash things and smoosh things in a way that I'm like, I would have never expected to have the Transformers shown in this way. It's so well done. Optimus Prime is such a great, just a well-done character. You really like him in this book. The art is fantastic. And I said this on the live show, but the injection of the G.I. Joe characters into Transformers, I was like, I don't know how this works. I'm worried this is going to feel a little bit like smashing when you have to play with like your neighbor when you're a kid and like they bring their toys over and it's like, I'm sorry, but those Popples aren't going to jive with my Marvel Superheroes Secret Wars action figures. But it really does, like, there's a little moment in here that I won't spoil what it is, but there's a moment in here that is cool. I liked it, and I hope it's more like this. And this story, I truly don't know where it's going because it's hard to know. It seems very bad is all I'm going to say.
Well, what's interesting is we've seen a lot of Transformers stories, and this does feel like Transformers right from the animated movie, right from the kind of animated TV show back in the day. So I love the voice of what Daniel Warren Johnson is channeling. And it comes
the voice of Optimus Prime, you mean?
Well, no, just Orson the kind Welles. Of voice of the story. Thank you with the Orson Welles reference to Unicron. Nice shout out there, yeah. But I'm talking about like the voice of the kind of story, the voice of what they're trying to say. And it kind of really feels like those 80s, 90s TV show slash movie, animated movie. But I just was like, this is so awesome. Like the way it starts, Optimus Prime feeling like the super dad who is like, hey, listen, we crash on your planet. We're bringing all this bullshit to you guys. We're fucking big metal monsters who aren't used to such a fragile, squishy world. I love that start, right? You know, so like very, very cool, very interesting. I mean, the art is just unbelievable, transforming bananas. And I feel like it's a little darker than the movie or the TV show, but I'm into it and I'm excited to see what's going to happen. I'm worried about what's going to happen because it seems like the good guys are a little slower than the bad guys. Like the bad guys are already collecting Energon cubes and the good guys are just kind of being like, how do we get Energon? So I'm like, oh shit.
Yeah, that's a bad, they should have a plan. Yeah, you got to catch up. You got to find your batteries. It's also funny, they're toys in real life and they're like, how do we get our batteries? They're like, that's what my toys have been saying for years.
Oh, wow. Well, you shouldn't talk to your toys, man.
No, the toys are talking to me. It also feels like Optimus Prime. Oh, you think so? Yeah. Optimus Prime seems to have like a father figure. You have like a father figure relationship with him? Like it'd be cool if your dad was a truck.
Yeah. Who wouldn't think that was cool? You know what I mean?
It's don't feel weird. It's fine to say that. It's fine to admit that.
All right, man.
You wish your dad was a truck.
A giant talking truck that was a great leader and always knew what to say in a comforting way. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And we should say, though, you should tell people that your dad transforms into a golf cart. So, like, you just wish he was, like, a little bit bigger, a talking golf cart. Let's move on and talk about more about Pete's dad. But first, let's talk about Gods number 2 from Marvel Comics, written by Jonathan Hickman, art by Valerio Schiti. What do you think about this, Pete? This is getting deeper into this Gods world. Something that, when Jonathan Hickman teased it, and all the promotion pages and all that came out about this, I thought this was going to be some, like, galaxy-spanning story about celestials or some kind of thing like that. Instead, this is very much like feels like an Image comic that has been put into the Marvel universe. We see some Doctor Strange, Clea, different characters.
It's interesting. I like what you're doing there. I do think artistically, it's a fucking amazeballs. You know what I mean? But I also love the smallness of this issue, you know what I mean? Because we got like this really cool secret library to the world, which was really awesome, you know. So like, I'm very interested in the way that it's starting, and I'm excited for more. But I'm also a little worried because I know it's Hickman and it's going to go over my head fast. So I'm just kind of enjoying the fact that right now I'm still understanding what's happening a little bit.
Nah. Well, I mean,
and I'm a sucker for a secret library, so you know.
Yeah, you love you hate regular libraries, but you love when they're secret.
Yeah, that's true.
There's a ton, like any Hickman book, there's a ton of ideas on display here, but I was really surprised that this issue took on sort of a grown-up Harry Potter tone to it. Mm-hmm. It feels like where this new character is sort of selected and like, hey, welcome, you're part of this school. And the first issue was jammed with this like star-crossed lovers story.
Right.
Where these two like, you know, Earth-controlling, universe-controlling houses, one character from each side have this relationship. We don't touch on that at all, really. And we're just into this sort of Harry Potter-esque flight of this new character into this larger world. I would think this would have been the first issue, and the first issue would have been a later issue. So I don't know. There's just a lot of question marks about where this is going. But it is good. Like, I do like it.
It would have been interesting if this was the first issue and then the second one was the second. I definitely would have been more on board. But I'm still can't say enough about how great the art is. And I'm very intrigued by this setup. It's very kind of cool and slow moving. It's not kind of like fast and like, oh, shit. You know what I mean? Like, I like how it's slowly building.
Cool and slow moving, just like your golf cart dad. Pete's intrigued. Can't argue with that. Let's move on to Blue Beetle number 3 from DC Comics, written
English
by Josh.
English edition.
Yeah, we are reading the English edition, but there is a Spanish language edition, and it's I love the DC's doing that. Yes. This is written by Josh Trujillo and art by Adrian Gutierrez. This getting into the Scarab War that we are fighting here amongst the multiple Scarabs, this sort of Green Lanternification of the Blue Beetle world, where we have all the different Scarabs doing battle, some good, some not so good. But in this issue, we get sort of a little detour where our Jaime Reyes Blue Beetle is off. Ted Kord was wrecked last issue, so he's being taken safely away, and he's meeting up with his ex to go on sort of a fact-finding mission to try to learn more about the Scarabs. Pete, how did you feel about this?
First off, fun cover. Loved it. Kind of looked like a old Versus video game poster, which was very cool. Love the vibrant colors. I think this was a really great issue. I really enjoyed it. Blue Beetle versus Red Bad Guy. Love it. Love the art style. It's fast-paced, action-forward. What's not to love? I feel like this is Blue Beetle is doing a really great job here. Story and action in a kind of a nice combination that feels like you're getting enough info, but not kind of like dumping it on you or anything like that. So, I'm really enjoying kind of how this is all unfolding.
I love seeing Tracy 13 in this, like a fun character to have here. We get Madame Xanadu. We get some cameos of a lot of other of the more mystical characters from the DC universe. So that's fun. I sort of want to see more of that. It's a shame, though. The part I'm less interested in is these other Scarabs. Like I see we're setting up Blood Scarab as this villain, and this villain goes hard. Like it's a... They've done a good job of setting up just how deadly this villain is, but I'd rather see more standalone, like Jaime go out with Tracy and them have like a fun magical adventure and then awkwardly talk about their breakup / relationship.
Well, maybe we're going to get it, buddy. You know what I mean?
Well, we get a lot of that here. That's what I'm saying. Like, I like that. I guess we'll just see where this story goes. But I feel like this is the kind of book that I'm ready. I think the second arc where we settle into the characters a little bit more is maybe what I'm looking forward to.
All right.
But let's move on. And I am so patient. Look at me. I'm so calm. I'm chill. My mic's cold. I could be an airline pilot for Delta Airlines.
Oof.
No?
I don't know, man.
Wow, you don't think that's a good career path?
Well, I just, you know what I mean? It's really hard right now. I mean, I don't know how much you've flown recently, but it's kind of a shit show.
Delta 499 looking to connect up from the tower to Zoom with my podcast friends. I have to do a podcast in the middle of this transatlantic flight. So just connect me to Pete LePage and Alex Zeldin. That would be cool.
Would it, or would everybody on the plane like really complain if they had to listen to our podcast while you were flying?
We're hitting a little turbulence, gang, and I'm in the middle of a podcast, so I am going to sit back, relax, and talk about Nice Jewish Boys, number one, from Comixology, written by our guy, Neil Clyde, art by John Brolia. In this issue, in this comic, we're setting up a world where a regular guy gets drawn into a potentially a life, or at least one crime, and perhaps more. This feels like, and there's some great back pages here where Neil talks about sort of his inspiration for this book. This feels like it's rooted in a lot of personal stuff, like Neil's background.
Wait, are you saying that Neil actually murdered somebody? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, Neil's killed. Neil has killed, and he will kill again.
I hope Statue of Limitations is up on him.
No, it's out there. It's in the press. But I really like this has like is just a nice crime comic set in like a more like grounded world. And I like the sort of our main character gets put right in the middle where he perhaps doesn't want to be. This is a great read. Pete, what did you think?
Yeah, I mean – The Nice Jewish Boy is kind of a ironic title a little bit because shit goes down. And, you know, I like the way Neil kind of unrolls the information a little bit. So we know it's not as hunky-dory as kind of originally set up. But I also love the fact that, you know, if you're not familiar with all the kind of Jewish verbiage or anything like that, like the words being used that maybe you're not familiar with, there is a glossary in the back so that you can kind of follow along, which was great. Because sometimes when you kind of stop the action to translate, it slows it down. So I was happy that like kind of kept the kind of pace going. And then in the back, you can kind of look up the words that maybe you didn't know. So it kind of had an old school kind of feel to it, which I really liked. I really like the art. Great job kind of setting up this world. It seems like it's very kind of realistic and kind of drawn from Neil's kind of childhood or past. I'm not saying that it's true stuff, but like...
No, and that's what he said. In the back matter, he's saying like, this isn't true, but a lot of the elements and details I think are drawn from his life in a way that makes for just a great story. The characters are well done. It gets you right in the action, then pulls you back into the more slice of life stuff that you get to. If you're a fan of any sort of crime comics across the board, from your Ed Brubaker stuff all the way down, like this book is right in that vein and definitely one that you can enjoy alongside. But let's jump into a book I have been loving as well, The Enfield Gang Massacre, number 4 from Image Comics, written by Chris Condon, art by Jacob Phillips, the team behind That Texas Blood.
You can tell.
Yeah, I mean, you can tell. This book is tragic. It's telling
great.
It's also fantastic. Yeah, I mean, it's the story's tragic. The book's amazing. Okay, telling the mostly true story of the Enfield Gang and how they were conspired against and massacred in the West, in Texas. But this is, you know, That Texas Blood is one of my favorite books of the last few years. I'm always talking it up. And what I like about this is it's in that same vein, but the art, Jacob Phillips does a great job of taking the art and stepping out just a little bit from That Texas Blood, giving it the violence a little bit of a different tone, a more historical feel to everything. And we're just watching this massacre unfold in different pieces. And it's a great read. It's a tough read if you like these characters and but it's just beautifully, beautifully done, I think, on both a writing and artist standpoint.
Yeah, I would like to jump in about the beauty of it all.
Let's turn it over to our beauty correspondent, Pete LePage.
Thank you. This works. I just think
this is working.
Yeah, I love the kind of – it does such a great job artistically giving you that kind of old-timey Western feel – And it just kind of brings you into the story so well artistically. I mean, it really is worth it for the art alone. It's so awesome what they're doing. And the panels and the pages and everything is so vibrant and so cool, and the tone of it. It really just is awesome the way it kind of sucks you in. And then you kind of get this true, tragic, awful, amazing kind of story happening, and you're kind of thrown into it. So it's really great.
It's fantastic. Definitely pick that up. Let's talk about Thanos number one from Marvel Comics, written by Christopher Cantwell, art by Thanos. Luca Pizzari. What's that?
Or it can be pronounced Thanos, however you want to say it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. You roll your own. That's what. Here's the thing. That's why I think Thanos is so mad, because everyone keeps saying his name in a different way.
Pronouncing his name. Yeah,
I know. That's what you're doing.
Yeah. Or maybe you're doing it.
No, it's Thanos, like anus. Thanos.
No.
Thanos. Well, Thanos, like anus. That's again. That's why he's so mad.
If you want to piss off a mad god, you go right ahead. But
that's the thing. He's so mad.
Yeah. Anyways, Thanos steals all of Fresno, which is a dick move. You know what I mean? Like,
though I will say, if you're going to steal one city, let's make it Fresno.
Oh, come on, dude. Well, you got no love for the Fresno?
What's your favorite thing about Fresno?
Probably just the sunsets. You know what I mean?
That's a gotcha. Great answer. I'm gonna gotcha. Count that. You got me. You got me on that one. That's not what I. That was sort of a trap question, and you nailed it. You got me on that one. You got me good.
Yeah, I mean, this is a really cool art style. Also the ship is a little weird. It kind of looks like three VCRs, which was kind of a weird.
A lot of our big space shuttle designers are going with a three VCR design.
Yeah, well, it shows. It really does.
No, it's the future. Flies, three VCRs smashed together.
People were scared. I was like, why are you scared? You know, that was just like the 80s. You know what I mean? There's nothing to be scared of.
Well, we have a lot of lying around as VCRs. Yeah. It's a great way to use them. Smash them together. Make a ship.
You can fly over the world. You know what I mean? But yeah, I'm not sure what's going on in this first issue here. It's just a lot of crazy shit. And, you know, it just seems like a little bit of a weird thing to pull a whole town out of the ground and out of the earth for one person. You know what I mean? Seems like maybe you could adjust that VCR thing a little bit better and maybe kind of, you know, just pull a couple of people. But whatever. Hey, sometimes you got to get a town to get to that.
Sometimes you got to go big. Take all of Fresno. Yeah. To give you a little backstory on the issue, we follow this one character who is living her life in Fresno, and suddenly, and seems like not hyper aware or like super powered in any way, just like sort of pretty regular, cool,
everyday
edgy
person. Yeah, yeah.
And then suddenly Thanos comes and takes her town, looking for her specifically. The Avengers are there, and they are trying to get, or I guess they're not the Avengers technically, they're sort of the Illuminati style Avengers, and Thanos is mad and he wants her, and they are going to be standing in the way. Now, what do you think her deal is?
I don't know, maybe she's related to Lady Death or something, because I know Thanos had a thing for Lady Death.
Oh, that's interesting. Death, that's a great take, because she sort of has
her daughter or something. Yeah.
She's dressed a little bit like Death from the Sandman universe.
A little goth, you know?
That's interesting. My thought was she's the new Star Brand from our Earth, which I thought could be cool. But I do like your Death guess is really smart. So maybe that's it.
I made a smart guess? What?
You made a smart. You made one smart.
I'll take my one smart and go home. Thank you.
Christopher, you're out of here. Yeah. Christopher Cantwell's great. He's written Thanos before, and it's good. We don't get a lot of time with our mad god quite yet. It's mostly from
Much anus yet. You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's a note you've given a lot, but we'll get it. We'll get the anus in there. Let's move on from that comment and talk about Fire and Ice. Welcome to Smallville number 3 from DC Comics, written by Joanne Starr, art by Natasha Bustos. In this issue, we're continuing on with Fire and Ice, making a bit of a mess as they try to reestablish themselves on the mean streets of Smallville, Kansas, a chill town where not much happens, except in this issue, everything's happening.
Yeah.
Pete, this is filled with jokes. Did you like them?
Yeah, this is fun madness. It's silly but great. Art is fantastic. Good times, great art. Crazy ass last panel. I thought this was cool. I'm enjoying the team on this. They're doing a great job.
I agree. I think this book's really found its footing in as the first three issues have gone on, like really balancing some fun jokes, fun character moments, real farce like energy of just like in this issue, Jimmy Olsen's here. Let's have him think this is cool. And they're running around trying to make their salon and the scam that Fire's been doing and all that make sense so they don't get exposed by the article he's writing about them. Wackiness ensues, and I mean that in a good way. Great collection of D-list heroes we have here. Ambush Bugs, a fun addition. But the art is great as well. Really fun, bright, light art, which matches the tone. It has like some nice just comedy, like back in the art sort of reminds me a little bit of Hawkeye back in the day from the Matt Fraction run with is that David Aja who was on that? Maybe I'm wrong there. But really nice.
Yeah, but it has that essence, that kind of brightness, but fun kind of vibe to it.
Yeah, and it makes for, and like I said, I think if you gave the first issue a shot and you weren't into it, I think it's worth coming back and giving this third issue a shot.
Agreed.
Because it's moving, it's making some nice moves forward in a great way. Let's move on. It is David Aja. I was right.
Hey, all right.
Hell yeah. Let's move on and talk about Army of Darkness Forever, number 2 from Dynamite Comics, written by our guy Tony Fleeks, art by Justin Greenwood. In this, we are back with our guy Ash, who is, you know, just trying to get by a little bit. We're dealing with some timelines, some multiple timelines here. Sick beardage.
I think it's fun, you know, because also Ash calls out like, hey, we're going to do a little story jumping around in time. So, you know, buckle up. So I love it, right? Just kind of calling it out, setting it up and leaning into it. Love the art, love the action and the humor. Ash is, you know, he's got to go clean up a bathroom. But, you know, all this other kind of madness ensues. So, yeah, I think it's has a little bit of a kind of cool cartoony look to it, but is really awesome.
And it feels like a real sequel to Army of Darkness and the world that they created there. Like, definitely the fantasy elements seem real and fantastical how you want them, and evil, while the Ash in the real world is sad and embarrassing, as you might expect. So it's covering both sides of that. We're pushing into some new territory. I think this is a great read. If you're an Army of Darkness fan, definitely worth picking up because it carries the movie into comic book form in a fantastic way. Let's move on to Phantom Road number 6 from Image Comics, written by Jeff Lemire, art by Gabriel H. Walta. I have been loving this book. We, you know, we give Jeff Lemire a little bit of grief sometimes for having his books be a little spare and not having a ton of story to them. I feel like this is one of my favorites, and he's been so prolific in the last couple of years. But if you're not picking up this one, it is so good. It's a great mystery. It's scary. This is a one of the books I would love to see made into a movie or TV show, just to see
scary.
It. But it has the right tone. It's very cinematic and has the right tone of like still scariness. The mystery, we keep getting new different little elements of like what is going on. Who are these sort of zombie people? What world are our two protagonists in? How do they relate to each other when they...
Yeah, there's still a lot of questions.
They're an odd couple. There's an X-Files element to it. And just real quick, I wanted to say that Gabriel Waltar is so good. It's so good.
Yeah, and that's the thing, because you're like, oh, Jeff Lemire, sometimes he does both the writing and the art. Walta's art is just so amazing. You really kind of, it still feels like a Lemire book without kind of like, but feels a little different too, which is great. I just think that in this issue, things are getting creepy and more bloody. But something that Justin said, that the creepy stillness is so enjoyable. There are these kind of like panels where you're just like, what? It's just so unique. and very interesting. It's such a cool read. Artistically impressive is how I would describe this book. It's really, it's very cool, but it creeps me the fuck out. So the idea of making it into a movie really, I would, couldn't pay me to see it. It's so scary. So.
I guess the last thing I would say is just, Pete, tonight when you're closing your eyes to go to sleep, just think about this right before you go to bed. So that you can, just to be more specific, think of like the sort of zombie's face.
I know what you're talking about. The very thin, pale
body. You know what I mean?
No.
Yeah. Stop. Just think about that right before bed. He would slowly walk up to you and then like reach for your neck or your face. Great.
The Amazing Spider-Man, number 37.
Let's move on to a book of my choice, Amazing Spider-Man, number 37, from Marvel Comics, written by Zeb Wells, art by Ed McGuinness. Yes. Here we are, following up on more Peter Parker and Rec Rap insanity. The limbo world is strong in the current Spider-Man ethos. We've got a character called the Repo Man, who is strange and is giving a lot of focus. Pete, why don't you speak first on this? How do you feel about this?
We get more Rex Rap here, and Ed McGuinness does such a great job drawing kind of like bigger, bulkier kind of heroes with and teeth. Villains. And so it's great to see him crushing this because I love his art style. Like it when he was on Red Hulk and Hulk and stuff like that was so great.
And this feels like that.
It does. It has that kind of cool, vibrant feel to it, which I really think. And Zeb Wells is, you know, this is a weird time in Spider-Man's life. And instead of dealing with the madness of what's going on with Spider-Man, we're kind of dealing with the rap. And so... Let's have a little Rex Rap break, and Ed McGuinness is killing it. So
Rec Rap is this character that is like a limbo demon-y Spider-Man who has teeth and shows up and is a little bit like Bizarro from DC Comics of Spider-Man.
A little bit.
So that's fun. My issue with like what's been going on in this main comic is it just feels like I'm like, what is important here? It's hard to tell what we're modulating and where the story is going. And without a sort of spine of a story, it just feels like stuff's happening. It feels like the last few issues have been like fill-in issues. We spent a lot of time like talking about Mary Jane, her being married, kids, all that.
Yeah, I wish we wouldn't.
I like that, though, because there's some emotional heat there. And then we've just moved past all of that, and we're in this story where Spider-Man is like, what's happening? And I feel a little bit that same way. We're setting up this big story coming called Gang War, and we get a little bit of that here, where it's going to be like all the sort of mafia characters from the Spider-Man Rogues Gallery going to be fighting for. New York City Spidey is going to be in the middle. These issues just feel wild. Like, they're not bad by any means. They're just strange, and it's hard to tell where to look, is what I would say. But let's look at something different. And this is – you should look at this because you want to make sure that you're not touching it and giving yourself a nasty rash. But of course, we're talking about Poison Ivy number 16 from DC Comics, written by G. Willow Wilson, art by Marcio Takara. In this issue, we are sort of following up on – everything that's come in this 16 issue series so far. You're talking about the movie.
Well, on the cover, that's what it says. It's the
Well, and this is dealing with like Poison Ivy. This series kicked off with Poison Ivy traveling around the country on a road trip, infecting people with spores that would kill them. From the fungus, a Lamia spore. And over the course of the 16 issues, she sort of has been like, I shouldn't be just killing random people. But this issue is all about the consequences of that and how those consequences are affecting regular people. And I love this. This was great just focusing in on some characters that we don't know, but telling their story in a way that has big ramifications for Poison Ivy. This feels very much like setting up for a big finale story about Poison Ivy and what this comic has been putting out there. This has been one of our favorites, I think, for the entire run. Pete, how did you feel?
Yeah, this is just awesome. I mean, first off, it's a creepy-ass cover, but this is a banger-ish, another banger-ish. G. Willow Wilson is absolutely killing it. The art is just super creepy-ass bananas in a fungusy zombie creepy kind of way. Bananas. But I just love the art so much. It's just every time I saw this in the stack, I was like, man, I can't wait to see what kind of crazy looking panels we're getting. And it's always been impressive. But man, I love this. I feel like this whole run has been such a cool exploration of Poison Ivy in a way where they're not really kind of tied to anybody, but kind of bouncing around in this kind of road trip of madness. So I loved how kind of tripped out it's been and kind of the yeah. story that's woven. But, you know, poor Chuck in this one, really, you know.
Poor Chuck.
Yeah.
No luck, Chuck.
Yeah. Great-ish, though. Definitely worth checking out.
Great-ish. Every issue of this book has been excellent. Even the ones that were part of the crossover where they didn't really have to do that, but they still found a way to make them work. Check out all of them. But let's move on to Knights number 2 from Image Comics, written by Wyatt Kennedy, art by Luigi Formisano.
Luigi?
What are we talking about? Weege. We got Weege here. The first issue of this, I think we talked about it as like, this book is wild, cramming a lot of ideas together, but it really works and it has a nice cohesive tone to it. And I think that continues into this issue. Our main character is in love with a vampire, trying to figure out just work and life. Hang makes friends with a star-nosed mole. Yeah, is that the animal we're talking about? Which is just a fun, there's no explanation really given to why, but they talk, they get into their lives. It's really fun. I love the ghost character and all the stuff that's happening. This is one of those books that's written so confidently, it doesn't make me question all the crazy choices. And so I don't, and I like it. How do you feel?
Yeah, this is just amazing trip down animals and creatures in this creative, fun as shit way. I absolutely love it. It's kind of gross and beautiful and all the things in between. I love the way it moved. I love the space it gave to characters, big and small. I just felt like I was in such great hands in this book as far as
storytelling
perspective. It was just really impressive from start to finish. I was just like, wow, what a read. This is just such a cool ass comic book and so well done artistically and story wise. So we don't really know everything that's going on, but it doesn't matter yet.
It's a great jam sesh.
Yeah.
If you're looking for a fresh type of comic storytelling, I would check out Knights number 2 and number 1 first. Do number 1 first. That's my advice. Guardians of the Galaxy number 8, which is the 8th one from starting from 1, from Marvel Comics, written by Colin Kelly and Jackson Lansing, art by Kev Walker. In this issue, the Guardians are living in Groot. They're living in a big old Groot.
Living that Groot life.
They're living that Groot life. The ramifications of Groot fall have sort of come through. They're definitely continuing on with a big Groot-focused story. But in this issue, I feel like the team – I really like Kelly and Lansing as writers. I think the art here is great. Let me just say that. I like the different character designs we've gotten from our Guardians. It's really cool. Great storytelling from an art perspective. Kelly and Lansing in this story have been very coy with what's happening. Part of the story was like a Western feel, A. B, we don't know what's happening really with these characters. We're just watching them. And I feel like now that we've gotten past sort of the first arc, we're in a place where I'm like, I know enough about what's happening that I can like this story. I like the changes that have happened. It feels like the Western energy doesn't feel as Serenity-esque here anymore. It feels like it actually is a Guardian story when before it felt a little too close to that. And I like the setup for next issue about Mantis. I'm excited for that.
Yeah, Mantis kills it in this episode. I love the comings and goings of Mantis. But yeah, this is kind of crazy, everything that's going down in this Guardians of the Galaxy issue. They've kind of all died and now are Grootified. And it's
they got Grooted.
Yeah, it's a very interesting kind of idea. They have these kind of green versions of the character, and now they're just trying to spread Groot throughout the universe, which I don't know if it's a good idea or not, but man.
Too many Groots?
Well, you can take a character that you love, and then you can go too hard on it, and I think you can over-Groot it a little bit. And I think they're kind of having some fun leaning into that idea.
Well, I mean, I do think that is something that happens a lot in comics, where after a while, a team or a character has been written, it's like, let's make a crazy mythology for this character. Talked about the Blue Beetle, Green Lantern, all that stuff where you're trying to expand the mythology. And for this, it's really powered up Groot in this storyline. And that,
you know, Groot's not even in this storyline.
Well, he's in it in that they're all riding around in him.
Yeah, yeah.
If you were riding around in me, or if you had like a family member who was a golf cart, like, I don't think, you know, they'd always be around, if you know what I'm talking about. Yeah, hypothetically. Sure. Hypothetically speaking.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, Groot's there. I just feel like, where is this going in a larger sense for Groot? Because I don't need the rest of the Marvel universe being like, well, now there's, everything's Groot. You got to have a Groot everywhere or whatever.
Yeah.
So
we'll see. It's a very interesting creative place to be on a team that's been around for a long time. So that's very cool that we can get to such a different place.
Yeah, exactly. Let's talk about Shazam number 5 from DC Comics, written by Mark Waid, art by your guy, Dan Mora. Pete, how do you feel about Shazam?
Well, yeah, I love this. I think this is cool. I mean, spoilers, but Freddy's trying to, take his powers, and then there's kind of a twist at the end. I think this is a very enjoyable comic. I love the art. Just really impressive. Story is good, and I want it to continue, and I'm excited to see what's going to happen next.
The Dan Mora art is fantastic. Yes. Dan Mora, of course, famous for, I believe the title of the book was This Old Lady's a Badass, for Pete LePage, the Dan Mora
Badass art. Older Ladies?
Yeah, exactly. But that's where we first sort of saw Dan Mora's art, maybe not the first time, but the most recently. And this, his art's gotten even better. It's so good. He draws Mary Marvel with such like great energy. This book is and Mark Waid, is his writing is supporting this as well, is simultaneously full of like youth and innocence for these characters, which is perfect. Even the gods that we see here, while at the same time telling this epic, serious mythological stories and huge action. Simultaneously, and that's not easy. So that's why having two masters at work here is great. Shazam's never been my favorite thing, but this is just really good storytelling.
I agree.
You know, it's special. Just like our next book, the Hollywood Special, number 3.
I'll have the Hollywood Special, please.
Oh, we're coming right up. From IDW, written by Jeremy Lambert, art by Claire Rowe. We've been following this story where a couple actors are crossing the country via train, which was a great way to travel back in the day, even now.
Even now, I was going to say, I love a train.
We're following their hard drinkers. They're not great at dealing with their problems. In this, we get into the sort of the mind of one of the actors. Who we learn a lot about the things she's given up for her career, her family, and see some really horrifying stuff.
Really horrifying. Like, I said nope out loud a bunch of times while reading this and closed it and walked away, and then I had to come back.
No, thank you for coming back. Well, then just a little more backstory. Their train pulls into a town where there's been a mining accident, and they get out and get caught up in something evil.
Stay on the fucking train.
You know no, I mean? It's fine to get off and explore a mining accident. Anytime I'm driving past.
I don't think
if I see a big cave and I'm driving, I'm like, I'm going to go explore this in case there's a mining accident, you know? Yeah. I love to explore.
All right. First off, so like the whole kid with his neck snapped thing was so gross and so creepy. First off, like creepy kids and horror things freak me the fuck out anyway. But that whole neck thing was like such a holy fucking
check
shit.
Your neck. You would say.
Yeah. Yeah, I just think that, like, I liked when the monster ordered the Hollywood special off the menu, and that was a fun kind of, like, this is the title of the comic moment. And I think it's very creepy, but it's also very creative. It's just hard for me, horror-wise, to enjoy this as much as
Pete doesn't like horror. He's scared. He's scared right now. This is part of Scott Snyder's Dark Spaces imprint from IDW, and man, it's been really good. I feel like we're getting a lot of great stories here. This one's, I really enjoy this as well. Good art, good horror. Always order the Hollywood special, and be careful what you order, because it might just be a monster made out of your eggs. And
oh my god, yeah, that the eggs that look like eyeballs. Oh, go fuck yourself, man.
You'll never look at over easy eggs again, Pete.
Oh man, I don't like over easy to begin with, and that's
really why. What are you? Scrambled, you're sunny though. Side up, scrambled.
Yeah,
grow up.
No.
So never. You only get scrambled.
Don't tell someone who collects and reads comic books to grow up. You fucking asshole.
Grow up in, I mean, specifically with your eggs.
No.
Grow up and get an egg that'll flip where you can see the yolk.
No, I don't want any of that runny
shit. Dip a yolk.
No, kill it all in the thing, mix it all up, and give me that yellow fluffiness.
No, man. You need your breakfast made into a face. You need like a egg, hair, toast, eyes, and a bacon smile. That's how you eat your breakfast.
I don't want a fucking Benedict. I don't want no runny bullshit. Scramble that fucking shit up, man. Put a hot sauce on it, and that's how you're supposed to eat eggs.
Yeah, exactly. Of course, everything's a garbage plate in the making for you. Let's talk Star Signs number 6 from Image Comics, written by Saladin Ahmed, art by Megan Levins. art by Megan Levins. This is a story about a world where the stars go away.
In a world.
And when they do, a handful of people are given superpowers. It's a mythological situation that seems to have happened before and is continuing to happen. The characters are like, I like what's happening here. These people are on the run. They're trying to figure out what's happening to them. They're dealing with the larger powers. As we learn in this issue, someone is trying to take power from them by doing something not nice, let me say. Pete, how do you feel about this?
Well, I think this is a very kind of creative and cool book. I like how unique and interesting it is. I love the character designs, the art. There's a softness to the art, which is cool. You know, it's a cool idea of like, you know that person who's like really too into star signs a little bit, you know what I mean?
But yeah,
what
a lot of people
powers, you know, that came along with it. So fun reveal. I also like, speaking of fun reveals, that kind of dude with the animal powers in the park. That was a cool moment. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's fun what happens if you smoke weed in a park and just hang out and wait for people to walk up to you. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You think that's what it is?
Yeah.
The thing with this book is it's good. It's just very close to The Wicked and the Divine, Kieran Gillen's book, about a similar situation. So I'm hoping we find a little bit more differentiation. I think it's well done. The art is good. The characters are, like, I like them. It just feels so close to that, almost down to some of the ways the characters look. So I would like if we found some more differentiation there.
I think as the story goes on, it will happen.
Def. Let's talk Uncanny Spider-Man number 3 from Marvel Comics, written by Cy Spurrier, art by Javier Pena. We got this Nightcrawler guy, and he is the best Spider-Man? Question mark?
Kurt B. Falcon is what the title of this comic should be. You know what I mean?
And you know, he's getting with my girl, Silver Sable.
Yeah.
So you know I'm mad. Tough.
There was even a whole... There was words in there about Silver Sable. You know what I mean?
I
assume that was about how great she is a character and all.
Oh, you mean the text pages? Pete, not a huge fan of the text pages.
Yeah, I'm not going to fucking read a book while a comic is going on. Go fuck yourself.
I don't know if you saw. I thought of you, Pete, on SNL. Was it last week? Nate Bargatze, the stand-up, hosted.
Yeah.
And he, in his monologue, he had a bit about like how, like, here I am reading a book. Put some blank pages in there. I'm already underwater. Give me a break. I'm underwater with all these words. I thought of you, and I thought it was very, very funny. Yeah, he's very funny. Great joke writer. But we're talking about Uncanny Spider-Man right here. Yeah. I think this is great. It's Cy Spurrier is so good at just like being a little weird and telling us like interesting stories featuring our mainstream characters. And this romance between Nightcrawler and Silver Sable is so sweet. I like that it's like dangerous. It feels like if you're like missing the Bat-Cat relationship over from DC Comics, this has that vibe. So I think come check that out. I would like see a ton more of
fucking. If you're into late night roof fucking, then
that's why I live in New York. You can't do that in the country. You can't do late night roof fucking in the country because your roofs are angled because of the snow where I'm from. You got to come to New York for late night roof fucking.
You sure do.
And that's where it happens. Gotham City in New York. But this book is great. Definitely one of my favorites in the Fall of X era that we're in right now. And if you're a Spider-Man fan who's been missing some classic Spidey tales, I would say pick this up.
Yeah. Shout out to Cy, killing the game.
Cy! Here comes a book that, Pete, I know you want to talk about. The Joker, The Man Who Stopped Laughing, number 12, from DC Comics, written by, we can just call him Bergie now. He doesn't like to go by his full name, right? Yeah, anymore?
I don't think we even need to say the full name.
Yeah, we would never say his name. Matthew Rosenberg, art by Carmen Bergie. Gian Domenico. In this issue, we're bringing to a close an epic year-long story that I think has a bit redefined the Joker. We get a little bit of this in the other continuity in the Batman issue we talked about, which I thought was great. We get some of the other Batman stuff affecting this issue with Red Hood, who we have an update from in here. Pete, talk it up.
Well, this has just been kind of exploring this idea of two Jokers, right? And it's been really kind of crazy and what's going on. And so I felt like they did a great job of wrapping this kind of up in an interesting way that gets you excited for more, because hopefully DC's going to have Bergie back, because I want to see this story continue for sure. Just really impressive the choices being made in this book, all the kind of moves. When you have read comics for as long as we have, sometimes you're not surprised anymore. But I was just like, there was a lot of like, oh shit moments in here that I was just like, god damn, this is fun. I'm having a blast with this. And and can't say enough about the cool ass art. It's just got kind of like a young, kind of badass kind of vibe to it that I really think works great for the Joker. I can't say enough cool things. You should read this whole fucking thing. It's great from start to finish. There's so much great humor in here. Bergie is a fucking master, and it's great to see him killing it.
Our guy Bergie is really setting up as the Joker scribe. Like, it's very fun, like you're saying, Pete. It's joke heavy. Like, the Joker gets to be crazy but in a way that isn't just meant to be horrifying. It's fun also.
Yeah,
I love the way,
like, LA versus New York. It starts off with, you know, way back in issue one or two was just hysterical.
And I love the point where sort of the two Jokers that we are dealing with here, the point is like, why does it matter? They're both psychopaths. Who cares which one?
Who cares? Yeah.
And I really love the way the issue ended. I thought it was so funny and smart.
Yeah, sometimes when you have kind of crazy meeting crazy, it gets weird fast, and then you're like, what are we doing? But it almost hit that tipping point and then kind of made a fucking bold choice. So
that's right. Crazy meets crazy, the LePage family reunion. We've all been there, and I can't wait to get the invite again. I'm going to make my potato salad. Especially in the future as we enter midlife, or How to Hero at 50, number 2, from Image Comics. Written by Brian Buccellato, art by Stefano Simeone. In this, we are continuing on with a guy who has lived his life sort of in fear, but realizes that as he confronts that fear, he has superpowers.
More fire in comic books here in this issue. Yeah, this guy kind of realizes he has fire-resistant powers, which is a thing, which is cool. And then he's got, like, a cool old gold mask kind of helmet thing that
old
he wears.
Old gold.
It's old gold. And it kind of reminds me of the Helmet of Fate a little bit.
Dr. Fate.
Yeah, I really love the art style. It has a fun feel to it. I'm enjoying this comic with each issue more and more. I like what it's building on, what it's kind of creating. So I'm getting more and more into this world and liking it. And maybe that's just because I'm getting older. But yeah, this is cool.
Yeah, this has a Unbreakable vibe to it in a really nice way. It's very fun. Good friendships here, some nice family stuff, and then a little bit of a mystery unfolding. It is interesting. This is the second sort of like I'm a firefighter, fire-based comic in the stack. I guess that's just in the air. But this is the more fun. The other Charred Remains is more of a dark exploration mystery. Yeah. This is sort of a fun superhero side of it with a little bit of mystery as well.
Yeah, I agree. And if you're going to fucking make your potato salad, just make sure you put some seasoning on it, all right? Well, you know what I mean?
Don't you dare. If anything, I'm over-seasoning.
Okay.
Like you're getting the Old Bay on top, even if you want it or not.
Nice, dude. That's what I'm talking about, bro. Come on.
X-Force number 46 from Marvel Comics from Benjamin
Percy. You don't know
Percy.
What Old Bay is. You need to fucking start living your life a little bit differently, all right?
Yeah, you need to get more salt in your body than it definitely wants, because that's where your Old Bay lifestyle. X-Force number 46 from Marvel, written by Benjamin Percy, art by Robert Gill. This bringing to a close this saga of Pyotr Rasputin and his brother and their battle to be in charge of a body and all of X-Force, Domino with her wooden arm and all these other characters that are in their own strange places in a strange dimension, fighting a battle to just get back to Earth. Doctor Strange is involved as the portal spinner in his way. This book is crazy. It has a lot of just wild sci-fi elements thrown together. But man, it came together really well. And the text pages in this book I thought were great. Sort of this character who's been writing throughout this arc. He's the one who's like sort of controlling the story in a way. And we get to see his actual pages here. I thought were really cool. Really like them. It feels like we're entering a new status quo for this X-Force team, a book that maintains its status quo despite Fall of X while still including elements. I've enjoyed this.
Yeah, I hate to pull a Zalbatron here, but I really love the second half when Deadpool shows up.
You liked it more when Deadpool was there. Okay.
Well, I just felt like at that point when he showed up on, like it really did a great job ending, like landing the ship at the end. I just felt like the second half of it was cleaner, made a lot more sense, was fun, enjoyable. Colossus ripping hearts out, little dudes crawling out of dead people. I mean, what the fuck is going on? But
yeah,
I thought like the ending was really cool and they did a good job of kind of like cleaning up the madness and kind of bringing the ship to a nice landing, you know what I mean? Maybe where some simpler people clap when they land and it's like, okay, great, we were alive, you know what I mean?
We are coming in for a nice landing. Colossus is pulling the heart out of his brother's chest. And that's the end of this flight and podcast. Please enjoy New York City.
Yay!
And please also enjoy Dead Lucky number 10 from Image Comics, written by Melissa Flores, art by French Carlo Magno. This continuing the story of From the Massiverse, one of the, I guess, fringier characters from the Massiverse set in San Francisco. This former vet has the ghosts of people she served with, maybe, who are in her tech, haunting her as she fights to save San Francisco from this mega corporation. This has been one of my more favorite Massiverse stories going forward for a long time, but this one feels, it's starting to be a little wobbly. I don't quite know what's happening as much anymore, so it's a little tricky to follow, but I really love the premise, and I like the characters. I like our main character and sort of this relationship she has with the guy she just found, reconnected with. So I want to see how this next, these next couple issues shape up.
Yeah, I agree. I also really love the art. The art is almost like a cool animation style. It's very sleek, very cool looking. I love how clean it is. I'm also the character designs are amazing. I love the characters in this book. Like JT Sizzle saying, this one is a little bit of a wobbly-ish, but I love the series, so I'm willing to roll with it to kind of see where it's going. But I was a little kind of like, whoa, what are we doing?
What are we doing? We're doing Dark Ride number 9 from Image Comics, written by Joshua Williamson, art by Andre Bresson. That's your Bresson. Guy. This is my guy. This book, this team from Birthright, one of my favorite comics of the last decade. This about a evil amusement park, perhaps, and the evil family or the evil seed of that is in this family that started the whole thing. We keep going back and forth between just how supernatural this book is. It's quite a line to tread. This issue focuses on Halloween.
There's a event.
The person. There's a brother or sister duo who have taken over the park from their dad, who lives in the bowels of it. We see a lot of her here, and her maybe becoming the villain.
Yeah, here? She kind of loses it on a super fan.
On a super fan who is creepy and maybe deserves a little bit of rebuke. But big reveal at the end of this issue, and. This is just a fun, very specific comic set in this world of amusement parks and evil, like a Disney if it was focused on Satan. And it's very fun.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people would say Disney is focused on Satan. But I think that this story artistically is amazing. It's kind of this cute, adorable kind of art with all this horrible, evil chaos going on. Yeah, we see Halloween kind of losing it a little bit and then kind of reveals to her brother like, hey, dipshit, our dad sold our souls. So very interesting. I'm interested to see how this wraps up, but this is also way too fucking creepy for me.
Nice. A lot of books this week, too creepy for Pete. Right on the heels of Halloween. Pete's favorite. See, here's the thing with Halloween, Pete. It's scary stuff, but it's also candy. How do you find that line?
It's a real, it's tough.
Must be confusing for you.
Yeah.
Let's talk X-Men Red number 17 from Marvel Comics, written by Al Ewing, art by Yildiray Senar. This focusing on Araco, we got Apocalypse, Storm trying to fight a war, given the choice of pressing a button that would basically kill everyone on the other side, committing some sort of horrible war crime. That's what she's struggling with here. Apocalypse shows up. We get some interesting mutant characters, Sunfire, a couple others, the Gabriel Summers, the sort of evil Summers brother, I guess you could say.
Summers brother is evil.
Yep, everyone has a take. Big Storm issue here. Yeah. I was sort of down on this book a little bit because it was so dense and dealing with characters that aren't really part of the center of Fall of X or the X-Men universe in any way. But this issue was like, it's like reading the Bible, but a little bit cooler.
Wow. I don't know if I would ever say that. I just think that like the art style also is really amazing, especially in this issue. There's kind of like these panels where it almost feels like old school, kind of like Silver Age comic, kind of a Kirby-esque.
That was cool. Agreed. Yeah,
that was really great. But shit's weird in this issue. There's a island that gets up and walks away, and I was like, all right, here we go with the fucking island fucking again. Like, we got to leave islands alone. I don't know.
Island not fucking, island fighting.
Yeah, well, yeah. Anyways, yeah, Storm is the key to Apocalypse's plan here, and it feels very kind of epic as far as apocalyptic evil plan here. It's a real dick to his kid, though, which I didn't appreciate. You know what I mean? It was
I bet he's kind of
walks by him. He's like, father, and he's like, oh, this is what you're doing with your life. He's like, yeah, dad, I'm really into this scene right now. He's like, whatever, son, I'm power walking as I'm kind of conducting yeah. evil plan. I was like, Jesus, Apocalypse. I mean, I know you're a villain, but come on, dude.
Not a great dad. You know, I'd rather have a golf cart as a dad, honestly. let's talk House of Slaughter, number 19, of Boom Studios, written by Sam Johns, art by Letizia Catanici. This arc has been interesting. Like, I love House of Slaughter. I know.
Watch your mouth.
Something's Killing the Children, one of your favorite books, Pete. I know that for a fact. I enjoy that book, but I've been more of a House of Slaughter guy. I like the deeper dives into the mythology and sort of the spotlighting different characters. I feel like more story happens. And in this issue, a ton of story happens. It's scary. I've been liking the story, the Alabaster story, focusing on this new character named Bait because he doesn't have arms, and how he – the complicated position he's in living in this house, trying to protect the people and solve the mystery of how these monsters are attacking. I really have been enjoying this.
Yeah. I mean, spoilers, but I'm really worried about Bait at the end of this issue here.
Yeah. Like a lot of Bait in trouble.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I agree. This has been just an awesome, absolutely great comic to kind of explore, do a deeper dive on the characters we know and love, and also shed some light on some new characters. Art is absolutely fan-fucking-tastic. I love the kind of like, almost like light pencil kind of look it has to it in a certain way, and the way the kind of action and movement is portrayed. I really love it. Mm. I'm just worried about Bait and how that's all going to unravel. But man, it's a banger-ish.
Banger-ish. And let's wrap up a banger ep of the stack with Creepshow Volume 2, Number 3 from Image Comics, written by Zoe Thurgood and Joel Farrelly, art by Zoe Thurgood and Goran Suzuka. The Creepshow has been great, giving us two sort of crypt keeper like stories of horrifying things that people are doing to other people or different situations. The second story I thought was fun, interesting, dealing with sort of a monster, thieves encountering a situation where they could make a monster appear, whether they can get away or not. I thought was cool, well drawn, but this Zoe Thurgood story at the front was fantastic. Worth it for the price alone. Definitely pick up
Baseball's this art too.
Great art. Zoe Thurgood, who we know from a lot of work, but Rain, I believe, was the one with the limited series that Joe Hill, based on a Joe Hill short story. If you haven't read that, definitely go check that out. But man, this story was great about someone who has the gift / curse of living forever, and just great.
Yeah, I just super cool collection of stories here. You get two in this fantastic Creepshow Volume 2. So, everything Justin said, plus just a tip of the hat to the artists and their amazing work.
Tip of the hat to you for listening to this episode of The Stack, because it is over, folks. That's a lot of great comics. Please go check them all out. Please continue to check us out. We do a million different podcasts. Scott Pilgrim versus the podcast, setting up, covering the books and the movie and video game coming soon before we get to the series. Comic Book Club news every day, every weekday, brand new news.
Don't forget about the Doom Room. Jump into the Doom Room.
The Doom Room, closing up our love of Doom Patrol as that series comes to a close. Marvel Vision, you can check out our Patreon at patreon.com/comicbookclub. Subscribe on all the places you listen to Comic Book Club and podcasts in general. Follow us on Twitter at Comic Book Live, Comic Book Club Live on Instagram, TikTok, comicbookclublive.com for all of these podcasts if you can't find them. Pete, that's all we got. Go get out of here. Go to the family reunion. I'll be there. I'm riding your dad to the family reunion with my potato salad.
That's really weird, man.
You got that right. Later. So grab your grin, hello.